Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
You know, me and my wife, I mean, you know, I think it's a dream come true to kind of, we all play this game for, like, we dream of playing this game as kids. And, you know, to be able to be here on the South Side for the next 5 to 7 years, I mean, the stability, the financial security, man, it's an unbelievable feeling. And, you know, me and my wife, like, we can't thank the White Sox enough. We can't thank Jerry, Kenny, Jeremy, Chris Getz, like, all those guys. I mean, they've taken care of us, and, you know, we hope to repay the favor.
That is White Sox pitcher Aaron Bummer, who got himself a new contract today. And a lot to go over with that and just what's going on in Glendale. So let's go out to the Alpamonte Ford hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. And we're going to welcome in James Fegan from The Athletic at JR Fegan on Twitter. James, how you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty well. Having to stay indoors because the weather in Arizona is weird, but you know, could be worse.
I mean, is it too lame to just say it's also raining for Aaron Bummer because of all the money he's getting and the security? I don't know.
Yes, it is too lame.
Okay, well, it's a good thing I didn't do that then. So I guess what's your biggest takeaway from Aaron Bummer getting locked up on a 5-year deal with a couple options as well?
I guess it protects them against if they wanted to make him a closer, which is not what they're doing right now. And if he does become basically a top five reliever, if he becomes Zach Britton, then they've like saved money. But because of that just being kind of rare, and the fact that this is a guy who has injury history, who literally last spring was like looked out of sorts and got sent down to the minors, it really just seems like a nice thing for Aaron Bummer personally, that he gets this kind of long-term financial security. I mean, you know, last year I don't know how much you know he's going to make in his career in baseball, and now he's got $60 million guaranteed. So it's nice for him, and he's one of the nicest guys in the clubhouse, and very insightful, and kind of reporter's dream, other than the fact that, you know, you don't get that many reasons to talk about the lefty middle reliever. But it's not a harmful deal for the White Sox. It's not a huge guarantee, even if it does kind of blow up. It's probably even smaller than maybe the Nate Jones deal was at the time, which is kind of the first thing I think of. But it's kind of a small story, I guess.
When spring training opened up, Rick opened up with all the injuries, the Giolito injury, the Yasmani Grandal injury. But the one I took note of was the Giovanni Gonzalez injury. What's his prognosis, and what are their plans for a starter if Gio will not be able to ring the bell on, well, March 26th, he won't be getting the ball, but at the beginning of the year?
I mean, right now they're still just like extending him out catch-wise, and everything they say is positive. I don't think we've really had the big test of like a full max effort bullpen, and we haven't seen him in a game. So at this point, they haven't reached like the threshold where you're worried about him being just too behind to actually start the season. And you also haven't really like gotten that big note of verification that he really is going to be able to work as hard as he needs to return the season on time. The way you laid it out, the biggest thing that like Gio Gonzalez can really do for this team is be ready opening day, because they have Michael Kopech could be ready if they're by May, by the way, they're like slow playing him. You know, he theoretically could be ready now, but they're not going to do that. And they have Carlos Rodon at the deadline. They don't need another guy to like kind of slowly push in at some point in the midseason. They have like, you know, Dane Dunning could even be ready at some point this year. What they really need from him is to be ready opening day and have their starting five guys. So I think they'll probably be pretty aggressive with that pretty soon. But right now, if it's not him, the depth goes towards, you know, not Dylan Covey because he's not around anymore, but sort of the guys with that quad A level that they didn't want to have to dip into again this year. That's when you start like wondering what the situation is with Alberto Mejia or Colin McRae or some of these NRIs who you really wouldn't want to start more than once or twice if you absolutely had to, but that's the kind of depth that they have to call on immediately in April if they have to. Luckily, there's some off days in the early portion of May's schedule, so I think they're probably not up against it too badly, but you definitely want to see Gio Gonzalez healthy as soon as you can.
I know Ricky was tipping his hand a little bit where he kind of likes the Tim Yoan 1-2 in that order. What do you see as far as, I know today he was going to have Luis Robert for the leadoff guy, but you know, as you put out, don't put in, you know, too many, you know, weight on this projection, on this lineup. What is your final thing you think that Ricky's going to have out there for the starting of March 26th? Do you think he's going to have a guy like Tim Anderson, which I think that on base will go down from 360 to about 330, so it's not ideal for an on base guy, but Ricky likes him up there. What do you think that Ricky's going to be doing on March 26th?
I mean, based on the way he shaded it, I would definitely think he wants Tim and Yoan up there. You know, if I was, that's not what I would do. I'd probably put something like Yasmani Grandal up there. Mm-hmm. It'd be really kooky. But if you were going to do that, and the way that he kind of plays matchups, I think his idea would be maybe Tim starting against lefties and Yoan starting against righties, or just kind of alternating based on how they're looking. But yeah, he definitely, as strong as he ever couches anything, which is not very strong, I would think that Luis Robert is going to be down the lineup and kind of eased in, similar to a way you probably saw Eloy hitting sixth in April of last year a lot. I agree with you that Tim Anderson, you know, he has a lot of offensive skills, and I don't think he's going to be like a bad hitter at any point, but he's just not the kind of typical leadoff guy. He kind of reminds me of like a more talented version of Larry Garcia as leadoff man last season, where he's going to, you know, be aggressive and get a lot of first pitch hits and be exciting on the base pass and whatnot, but be a larger on base. Is not really suited to that position. So I kind of hope that someone can emerge to shake him out of it. It'd be great if Luis Robert starts hitting his potential really soon and then becomes a leadoff guy down the road like they've hinted they think he can, but it sounds like they would go with the two guys who are most successful to start out the season, which is not maximum efficiency, but if everyone hits like they're supposed to, maybe it won't matter that much in the long run.
We're speaking with James Fegan here on The Score. Follow him on Twitter at JR Fegan and read all of his great White Sox coverage on The Athletic Chicago. So anything involving Yasiel Puig, boy, that just got stomped out real quick today.
KW.
Right. I assume he was, you know, he had the sunglasses on, sitting in the golf cart, just like the same tone as the Manny Machado day, just being like, you know what? No, this isn't happening because we're us, I guess. But would you have been in favor of that type of move, or does that just seem like at this point you're just trying a little too hard?
I didn't talk to Kenny about it, but I've also heard that, yeah, that's not happening. But I'm personally not someone who's really big on, like, I'm someone who's enjoyed watching Yasiel Puig a lot in his early portion of his career. I'm really not sold on Yasiel Puig as the guy who makes adjustments as the physical tools that were awesome when he was 24 start to tick back a little bit. And I'm not really sold on the guy who's going to come into a new team and be really super happy about a platoon role, especially where he's essentially the weak side of a platoon or giving away more at-bats to Nomar Mazara. I think if, like all of us, you're somewhat questionable of Nomar Mazara and his ability to really tap into it, yeah, I get the itch to see them try to do something to add to the outfield mix, because as the way we see it, you know, objectively, I would say it's not very strong. But this front office that obviously bought in on Nomar Mazara and thinks he's going to tap into some talent, I don't think there's suddenly going to be like, well, we made a mistake, he's not nearly as good as we thought he was, let's find someone to take away the majority at bats from. They've gotten this far with the idea that they think if his thumb is healthy, if he kind of quiets his hands and his stance a little bit, he's someone who's going to hit right-handers at an above average rate. because of that, I think they're probably looking at very small, small level role players who are really going to be the guys complementing him, which, yeah, I think that probably means more Adam Engel than anyone really wants to deal with, but it makes it unlikely that they're really going to find someone who's going to settle for that short side of the platoon role and be happy about it, which is, you know, somewhat the same reason that they haven't signed like a veteran second baseman, is that who's really lining up to be like start for a month before Nick Madrigal takes your job. I mean, not Yoelmer Sanchez and probably not many other guys.
And just going off that point, so in your heart of hearts, you think that the White Sox are going to be slow playing Nick Madrigal and doing service time manipulation? And this time, they can actually be kind of reasonable with it and say, you know what, he hasn't played a lot of plate appearances at AAA. We need to get more bats type of thing. But I see Nick Madrigal, if they tell me that he's this guy that doesn't strike out at all, gets solid contact, as a guy that's much better than Lory Garcia and much better than Danny Mendick and should be starting on the opening roster. So what do you think that Kenny, Jerry, and Rick are thinking as far as Nick Madrigal's future on this 2020 White Sox team?
They're a bit less sold on him, his readiness, than they were for Eloy and Luis Robert. I still think service time is obviously a major factor in that. I think it's not like he's completely 115% ready, but we're trying to get that extra year out of him, because they're a little bit less scared of his arm figures being more of these slap-hitting second basemen than, you know, potentially MVP-level bats if they hit their absolute ceiling. So it's a little bit more a mixture of the two factors, but I would agree that ultimately, you know, he is your starting second baseman, and he's going to be the best option by the end of the year. I think even if you think he can improve a little bit on AAA, he talked to me a little bit last week about how he's going to get a little bit more disciplined in the zone, that he even though he can really put the bat on the ball for everything from like his head to his toes, he needs to not do it as much as he can. I think that there's still a major league acclimation process, and you're better served just getting it done whenever you can, because it's going to happen whether you start in May or if you start in April. So why not start in April and, you know, get good 4 or 5 months of Nick Madrigal after the first month of jitters rather than, you know, 3 or 4.
One thing I've noticed, and maybe I'm off a little bit, is that we're getting a little more red-ass Ricky. Ricky Renteria at Sox Fest was fiery in these press conferences, the initial one. He seemed fired up, and people off the record, on the record, have been saying, man, Ricky's got me hyped up. Is it a difference from the Ricky that you've been following since you've been a White Sox beat guy, or am I just imagining things?
I think it started second half last year. I think he's opened up a bit. I think it's a bit less of let me be as guarded as possible and make sure nothing that isn't a unified statement of the White Sox voices as an organization flips out, and a bit more like, well, this is how I see things. You know, this is where I think there's value in this. And, you know, as a reporter, I think it's great. I love to see it. I like his personality. I don't agree with him on bunts, but I like debating him about it for a half hour on end. If mostly you're a fan and you just want the team to win, maybe you're more concerned about the fact that he is more defensive on bunts than you want to hear anybody be that. But
please keep it up, James.
I think it's great, though. I think people should know who he is and understand who he is, and in the long run, they'll probably have more sympathy if they really have feel like they're getting a full view of how he thinks.
I can't wait for the first time. Like he'll lead off. Yasmani Grandal will lead off some game, and we'll all be like, okay, this makes sense. All right, I at least like trying this out. And then in his second plate appearance, Ricky will have him bunt.
Ugh.
Because, you know, Adam Engel slapped a ball over like the first baseman's head, and he's on first base. I'm just preparing myself to be mad this year. Just on the whole, one thing with the coach thing. Speaking of the coaching staff, with when Don Cooper was on the station not that long ago, he was, you know, singing the praises of how, boy, if you just give him, you know, all the pitch lab type stuff that's being thrown out there and, you know, anything that can help him help his pitchers, it makes it completely unfair. Have you noticed anything that's changed in the way he's working with the pitchers early with maybe somebody specific in spring training so far?
Like a specific conversation with a guy? I mean, Coop still sounds like Coop, but I would say that he's definitely, like, I think in the moment when he's on the field and he has his eyes on people, he's operating the same way, because that's the time where he gets value out of making the kind of a typical old school pitching coach observations he can make. I think after practice is done, he then goes and reads Rapsodo readings for an hour, or looks at Edutronic video and looks at release points of pitches and sees how balls coming out of hands and how it might affect spin. That's probably not something he's doing in 2005. It's a little bit more behind the scenes, and I think it maybe guides a little bit more how off-season overhaul stuff for Dylan Cease as far as his delivery, more than you see it's kind of changing the way he works in bullpens, or certainly his personal demeanor is pretty consistent. But yeah, I think there's a little bit more there. I think his process has evolved.
What we've seen out of Raylo Lopez already, come in, looks like he's in the best shape of his life. So I don't know if he said that himself, but to me, from the naked eye, looks like he's in great shape. His offseason looked also, he worked with some people to get him a little bit better. Have you seen anything? I know it's been only like, you know, side tosses and bullpens. Have you seen any difference from Raylo, confidence, anything that came out of you that stuck out to you about Raylo Lopez? Because I think what Giolito did last year had to have him thinking like, maybe I got good stuff just like that guy. I just haven't put it together as yet.
Yeah, I think that what Giolito did last year, perked up a lot of people, not just in the clubhouse, but he said he got texts from other guys around the league who are looking to fix things. I think I was even talking to our Rockies writer the other day about some pitcher they have who just watches YouTube videos of Giolito and tries to change stuff. So Lopez is similar, and Lopez and Giolito are for the same agency, and Lopez had previously only trained in the Dominican Republic, and he went out to Los Angeles and trained with Giolito, which obviously seemed to be hooked up by their representation and all that. He didn't quite do everything in terms of like neural feedback, and I don't think he like worked with Giolito's high school pitching coach or anything like that, and it doesn't seem like a drastically altered like delivery or anything of that sort. But yeah, it does seem like they're, I don't really trust my eyes as a scout to say like, you know, Ronaldo Lopez has changed in some transformative way, but guys who seem kind of like, I can't really put a finger on why he's struggling, I don't know what to tell you, like James McCann last year would say, you know, this year looking at bullpens, he looks really good. I would imagine Ronaldo Lopez, a guy who sits in the high 90s, his bullpens have been looking good for a while now. It doesn't necessarily translate to games. And it's probably been a source of frustration how much like his good side work doesn't translate to games yet. So I'm not going to like beat the drum and declare that he's a new pitcher, man, a new man. He really has to go out and prove it. But as far as all the indications or stuff you'd want to hear from Ronaldo that he took, you know, getting his butt kicked last year seriously, I think it's there. I think that he did meaningful stuff to change his routine in the offseason, whether or not it'll work. I'm probably about as skeptical about it right now as I was with when Giolito was talking all this jargon last season, but still at a 6 ERA coming off of. I didn't really believe it that much.
And last thing we got from you, James Fegan. James Fegan from The Athletic covers the White Sox for them. You hauling any wood with your rental truck?
I did get my windshield damaged by a tiny little pebble the other day. So my huge honking truck has been humbled by a mere tiny rock flying across the I-10 at 100 miles an hour.
Yeah, Safe Life repairs and they replaced too. So did they give you a replacement truck or a replacement like Geo Storm, something like that? Or are you just rolling with that little crack?
Hopefully Alamo Rental Car doesn't listen to the like Chicago Sports Radio, because I'm just trying to turn it in and see if they don't notice it.
Yeah, why not?
Oh, it looks like a raindrop, kind of.
I mean,
yeah.
It's always there.
And I mean, they're renting out how many cars this time of year? So they're you just got to hope, okay, just check it in. All right, fine, we're good. All right, okay, you're good. Just get out of here.
For the people that don't know the story, it's like you were given a truck, like a full-size pickup truck as your rental truck as the last thing they had, right?
It was for some reason, the least expensive option. I wanted to, like, just change to, like, some Toyota Camry, and they wanted to charge me, like, $200 more. I was like, all right, whoa. I guess I'll figure out how to parallel park a pickup truck this week.
Jeez. I don't know why, like, I'm imagining it's, like, for people out there that have watched Arrested Development, like, you get the stair car, and it's just, like, you have all the hop-ons. That's what I'm imagining out there. Have all the other beat writers just hop on the stairs and just, like, take that.
It's full of standing water right now in the bed.
So you're saying you got a free pool?
Yeah, well, a pool full of leaves floating in it, yeah.
I didn't say it was a great pool, but it's a pool. I mean, it's free. You really can't be that picky.
Yeah, just got to hop in and deal with it.
All right, James, appreciate the time, man. Good stuff.
Thanks for having me.
That's James Fegan from The Athletic, at JR Fegan on Twitter. Yeah, that's I love thinking of that. Being like, okay, you're thinking you're just going to roll out with, like, you know, a sedan of some kind. Then you end up with the pickup. And then it's a day like today where it doesn't stop raining in Arizona. Mm-hmm. And you got a pool.
Exactly. And, like, if you guys want to see, go to J.R. Fegan on Twitter. It's February 11th. The truck he has, it's a huge Dodge Ram. Huge. And, like, in Arizona, usually it's dry. But, you know, it made out this today because of the deluge they're having out there in the Phoenix area. So that was good on them to foresee the forecast and have James go through this flood they're having out there in the Phoenix area. It's huge. I just can't believe that they gave him that big of a car and that Toyota Camry cost $200 more. Great car.
Yeah, that doesn't love make Toyotas. Any sense.
What I mean, a feeling.
Just get Mitch Trubisky's old beat up one. And that then couldn't turn out poorly
James
for him.
James can get drafted by the Bears.
Yeah. Except, but, you know, James isn't overrated.
Wow. Wow. You talk about my man Mitch like that. Just right on the air.
Yep.
It's ridiculous. Well, I mean, after the break, we got to talk a little bit more about the White Sox. Those things do concern me. Them choosing Lurie Garcia or Danny Mendick over the guy they've been hyping up. The guy that they said struck out, what, 3 times last year, 3% of the time in his minor league at bats.
Mm-hmm.
The guy who's got gold glove potential in the field.
Yes.
So he can hit and hit for contact. He's really fast, and his defense is stellar. What the hell are we waiting for?
Oh, I don't sound interested. I'm not interested in that.
What the hell are we waiting for? We know what Danny Mendick is. He's a placeholder. Now, I'm not saying that Nick Madrigal is Chris Bryant.
Sure.
But in this case, Danny Mendick and or Lurie Garcia is Mike Olt. And he's holding up a place for the guy that we think is going to be a star. Not a superstar like Chris Bryant, but we're just playing games with him.
Mm-hmm.
Just to be playing games with him. If you think you're going to compete in 2020, like the White Sox think they are, and every game is valuable, every game, the March games count as much as the September games, guys. The same exact amount. You should have your best players on here. And the White Sox hopefully will be thinking long and hard about that. And bringing their best players up north to battle versus the Kansas City Royals March 26th.
He's Herb Lawrence. I'm Rick Camp. We're here with you until 5 o'clock. At 4, we'll speak with Lawrence Holmes, who's also out in Arizona. I don't know if he will be in James Fegan's pool in the back of his truck. We can ask him when he comes on.
Merck, Fegan, Vince Gowan.
I smell a sitcom.
Beat writer swimming.
No. Somehow, I don't think that one would go over very well. We got more White Sox talk for you coming up next on The Score.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
He's not afraid. I think he really does track the ball very, very well. His body control is really good. So even though he might be and sometimes out of position, he can reach pitches that you wouldn't want him to reach, which he can. But again, he's a guy that might be able to spoil a lot of pitches. You start driving the pitch count up on a chucker, you know, it helps you. There are a lot of factors, obviously, a lot of things that we look at, a lot of indicators that you look at in order to see what will help you as a club and what can put that guy out sooner rather than later. And he's one of those guys that may be able to do things like that.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Visit ChicagoWolves.com/tickets to be able to make your way out to the Allstate Arena to see the Wolves. Ricky Renteria is a fan of Nick Madrigal.
Red-ass Ricky.
Yes, he is turning into that. So
all this good talk, all this praise.
Right. Are we finally getting to the point where any of the talk from either an individual or just the team in general, the talk around the team feels like it's getting a little over its skis?
Not necessarily. I mean, the whole thing I heard last year about this kid is that he puts bat to ball. Contact is a big time thing.
Mm-hmm.
He strikes out very little. He's got gold glove caliber. I think whatever the equivalent of the minor league's gold glove, he won that at the second base position. He's the total package as far as a solid Major League Baseball player. I don't think he's going to be Jose Altuve, which I think that's what most people projected him as, the short, small stature, a guy that can develop some power later. I don't think he will have that power later,
right,
especially since he won't have the signs or the buzzer. But you're going to tell me that Lurie Garcia, a guy that got on base like 31% of the time, and solid, a nice fifth infielder, fourth outfielder, perfect. Or Danny Mendick, guy you picked up. He was a small college guy, and you drafted him, and he's shot through the system after a while. Is going to stop your pick that you picked, 2 years ago?
Yeah.
From making the majors when he's ready. They can have that reason with him, like James pointed out, that he's only had a certain amount of bats at the AAA level. Going up that many levels last year from A to the AAA level was a lot. We need to get him a couple more bats to make sure that he's ready because we don't want to send him back down. They can have that, and also he won't command the number that a Luis Robert or a Eloy Jimenez would have if they would have been let play and gone to arbitration before they signed those long-term deals before they started playing. So this is the reason why you could start him on the major league roster, because second baseman in general, and I think B-Flow from the 108 put this out on his Twitter, that second baseman in general in free agency and arbitration don't make that much money. So you won't be getting a contract for him when his fourth year comes up that'd be like, oh man, or his fifth or sixth year, be like, oh, we can't afford this. He'll be on the average of what a second baseman is. And you could thank Ozzie Albies for taking that 7-year, what is it?
Like
something garbage, $27
million. Five or something like that.
Contract for tamping down second baseman prices. So, yeah, bring him up if he's the guy that is the best second baseman on the line in the camp. I don't have faith in them to do it without a contract extension.
Yeah, and it ties in our two conversations of, as you mentioned, his play more likely than not is not going to warrant a superstar-ish type contract. He's going to be a real solid guy. Like when you try and project out who's going to be doing what on the White Sox next LCS team, he's going to be a guy that you don't have to think about because you know what he's going to provide.
Solid.
Just
he'll be on base
towards the bottom of the towards the bottom of the order.
I think he's going to be in the top of the order eventually.
Okay.
He's an on-base monster.
Yeah. Okay. So even if he
doesn't strike out, gets a lot of contact, fast as hell. He'll be a top-of-the-order guy. He'll be your ideal, I think, leadoff guy when the White Sox are in the LCS.
Perfect. That's absolutely great for what they need. Cool. However, he's not going to command that money. But with a guy that's not, like you mentioned, one of your superstar prospects, and you're playing these games, it just doesn't make sense in a year where you've been selling the entire offseason playoffs. Playoffs is a real thing. Then act like a real playoff team. Don't care about when it comes to your service time games. Those don't matter for a guy that's not an elite of the elite prospect. I understand it more for a guy like Luis Robert, for a guy like Eloy. That makes sense when you don't have the extension in stone. But for a guy like Madrigal, just bring him up. Give yourself the opportunity to, as you mentioned, win as many of these April games as possible. Put yourself in a position to be able to win as many April games as possible. He's not going to be the be-all, end-all in those situations. But why put yourself at a disadvantage when you have that opportunity early in the season when, if you look at the schedule, they have some series where they can eat early. You see a lot of Kansas City early in the year.
Delicious.
So try and rack up some of those wins while you can. If you have to, if you end up having to pay him down the road, fine.
And speaking of a guy that doesn't like Kansas City like I don't, Timmy Anderson was pretty much slotted as the leadoff guy this week by Rick Renteria with his conversation with the assembled press. I'm not too much of a fan of that move because I don't believe that Tim Anderson, the guy that showed up last year, the 335, 357 on base guy, is going to show up in 2020. Now, I'm not saying he's going to fall off the table. If he does that for his career, 335, 357, he can lead off every single game that I play.
Yeah.
But I think he's going to go more to the mean. He's going to regress to the mean, maybe 285 and get on base 330, which is decent, but not a leadoff guy. We were just talking about the Cubs in the first hour about how they didn't produce a lot of runs late in the year because the leadoff spot was like an on-base percentage of 290. You can't have that. You can't have your leadoff guy not getting on base. Tim Anderson does not walk a lot. He had a 3% walk rate last year. I think he only walked 15 times. Let me look. Yeah, 15 times last year. So as a leadoff guy, he's not ideal. But if he gets on base almost 36% of the time, you can have that. But that's my contention. He's not that guy. And I want Johan doing it because I think his mind gets messed up. He thinks about being a leadoff guy. I think
right. The
one thing about Tim Anderson that might make him successful as a leadoff guy is that he doesn't care. He's got a clear mind. See ball, hit ball. He's not worried about walks. He's not worried about anything else. He's worried about balls here. Let me hit the ball there. And his BABIP was a little high last year. So I also think that's going to regress to the mean. And so he won't be getting as many hits that he got last year. So Yasmani Grandal would be the perfect guy for me to lead off for the White Sox. It doesn't seem like that's going to happen at the beginning. And hopefully they just prove me wrong. That Tim is a great leadoff here. He's this guy for his career. Goes into the Hall of Fame and the White Sox a couple championships. But I'm not too optimistic on Tim starting off the games for the White Sox as the guy, the leadoff guy. What about yourself, Rick?
Yeah, it's not an ideal situation. One of the things you like best about Tim Anderson is that he knows who he is and he doesn't give an F about what anybody else thinks. But when that thing is, listen, I'm not going to walk, and not just because it's a boring play, but just that he's not going to walk, it's not great. But for the moment, all things considered, I'm not going to be up in arms if Tim Anderson's leading off
okay. Early
in the season, assuming Madrigal's down in Charlotte, assuming everything plays out the way we expect it to, maybe not the way we would want it to. But you know, it's baseball season, or it's about to be baseball season. Because those of us that like the NBA and the NHL are going to say that it's not baseball season yet, because it's not.
It's not. But until regular season games play.
Right. But it definitely does feel more like baseball when Ron on the South Side calls in. Ron, how are you doing?
Hey, Rick, I tell you, long time, man. Just really enjoy you. Enjoy your show, guys. You know, I agree with you all 100% regarding Madrigal. I mentioned this to Bruce earlier. That I really think mainly for his defense also. This defense, particularly up the middle, is going to be very important. With Dallas Keuchel being a ground ball pitcher, but I don't know what else that he can learn in terms of being in the minor league. And three or four games, guys, could make a difference. But I'm really interested. You know, Bruce did say, well, that is his strong suit, but with different – infield shifts and just on a major league level, I just think the bet, and also playing along with Tim Anderson, you know. So that's that. I just agree with you. I don't see any reason why the White Sox would be bringing him up. Enjoy your show, guys. Thanks.
Appreciate it, Ron. Hey, Herb.
Hey.
Just wanted to say hi.
I also too. I think he called you Rick.
Yeah,
I know that he didn't. You know. Think that was here, but yeah, I am here. But Sean Anderson, who is our producer today, and Ken Folk of Tim Anderson too. Yeah, I don't know if you knew that.
I did not know that.
Doesn't look like it, but he is.
Him and separated, very long lineage, but we are separated.
Yes. So, what do you think about Tim Anderson, or who do you think is the ideal person as a Sox fan yourself, a Southsider yourself? Who do you think would profile the best up at the top of the White Sox lineup.
Yeah, Joe and I were talking about this last night on the show, and we ended up just talking about the fact that I think, at least right now on this team, I think it's going to be Madrigal at some point, and I think he is the best profile of a leadoff hitter. But at least to start the season, I think their best option will be Moncada, just because he can hit for a high average, he can hit for power as well, and he has that plus speed, and could draw walks, where Anderson struggled to do that. In the second position last year, he did draw his most walks with 13. 13 of his 15 walks Tim Anderson drew last year in that second spot. But I think just with the power that Moncada brings and his ability to be a switch hitter as well, that is going to at least make for the best profile of a leadoff hitter that's currently on the Sox team.
Yeah, I think that part is interesting because it seems like everybody wants to do their damnedest to just not put Yoan Moncada in that spot. And Herb, you articulated that a couple minutes ago as to why. But it does seem, it's just that at the moment, until Madrigal's up and Madrigal gets his bearings at the major league level, you just straight don't have that guy. So it's the theory of, do you put the best guy up there for the moment, or do you put as many guys in the position that they're going to be in for the rest of the season, for the majority of the season, and then just kind of fill in your one spot, which is, where you have the questions. Where can you afford to put someone up in that one spot that maybe you still trust to go back to where they would, in theory, fall back in the order? I think that's the interesting part, to see how much of it feels all in versus probably for the betterment of the entire season.
And with that, too, I do wonder then, what is the game plan of having Luis Robert be your leadoff hitter in spring training, and if that will play into exactly what you're saying right now? Are they trying to see what he will look like as a leadoff hitter and see if that's what he's going to project at some point in the regular season?
312-644-6767 is the number. 6711 on the text line. When we come back, have a note from Cubs camp that's not the most inspiring in the world for those that have had some bullpen worries for the Cubs.
Not unexpected either.
No, not at all. So he's from Lawrence Emmerich camp. We've got that note coming up next before we speak with Lawrence Holmes at the top of the hour on The Score.
We could be talking about him being ready to go at that point, and whether or not it's full go in games right in the regular season. I think we're going to probably ease him into games this spring, where some guys may be ready to go into games, in the stadium. We'll probably give him an outing or two in the minor league side just to kind of make sure everything's progressing the way he wants. It's a lot more controlled environment. But again, I don't foresee a whole lot of, shackles on him. I think we want to make sure that he progresses the way he wants to. And if he feels good, we're going to let him kind of take that next step.
Well,
yeah, Coombs got it right. That was Tommy Hotovy earlier, was on the 10th talking about Brandon Morrow. And this now from Jordan Bastian, Cubs beat writer for MLB.com. Cubs right-hander Brandon Morrow is down for at least a few days with what the team is calling a mild right upper chest strain. No clear timetable right now. Felt it in his last bullpen session. So, to be fair, the Cubs have not said at all that they were banking on having Brandon Morrow this year to be a big part of what they were doing in the bullpen. But it was definitely a name that a lot of people were intrigued by, just to see if he could get healthy at some point this year and be able to just make any sort of, I don't even know if you impact, but at least eat up a few innings for the Cubs, play some sort of role in the bullpen. But it's, Sean mentioned it in the break that I said it feels like baseball season when Ron from the South Side calls in, but it also feels like baseball season when you're getting injury updates on Brandon Morrow. So not great for the Cubs.
You got to feel sorry for the guy.
Yeah.
Because whenever he does pitch, he pitches pretty well, especially for the Cubs. They were counting on him to come back last year, like May, and then it was postponed to after All-Star break, and he got a couple setbacks, and if you heard him speaking at the beginning of camp, he kind of went into it. He's like, I felt like signing back with the Cubs because I feel like I owe them from last year. I owe them because they had so much faith in me, and he wanted to pitch well this year for the Cubs. I mean, this is looks like minor thing with the chest. So if you know, I'm praying for Brandon Morrow to be good because no one wants a person just to be hurt. And these are not phantom injuries.
Right.
He just, you know, can't stay healthy. It's nothing that he's doing necessarily. He's not out there just injuring himself on purpose. You want him to be able to do what he does best, and it seems like he just keeps on running into bad luck.
Yeah, it was kind of the MO of his career, because I know a lot of White Sox fans remember him from his days starting in Toronto, and that he always had good stuff. It was just a matter of being able to be consistent and staying healthy was part of it. And then he had, obviously, the great run with the Dodgers. But it's a little ironic that when the Cubs signed him, it was in the exact same position in which they were leaving Aroldis Chapman after 2016, where they said, well, essentially, we're going to trade for this guy. We're going to run him into the ground, and then he can be someone else's health issue for the next season. And that's pretty much what happened with Brandon Morrow after the Dodgers just used him and used him and used him, that when he pitched for the Cubs, as you mentioned, he was really good.
The last,
but especially considering his background and then how much he was used in LA, it just all added up and came back to bite the Cubs and Brandon Morrow himself in the butt.
The last 4 years that he pitched, 2015 through 2018, Padres, Dodgers, Cubs, he was a ERA plus of 198. MLB average is 100. He was almost double that. He was great. FIP was 2.81. His ERA was in the twos, early twos, 2.04.
Mm-hmm.
So he was filthy. He was dominating. His strikeouts per nine were at 8. Not, you know, earth-shattering, especially for a reliever, but getting the job done. He's been pretty good. Only given up 7 home runs in that length of time, striking out 102 people in those 4 years. So, yeah, when he does pitch, he's pretty dominant. It's just getting him back on the mound. It's another setback for Brandon Morrow. And he only signed a minor league contract, so the Cubs are not depending on him this year. They've already, you know, recruited and scouted over him with other players. But if they get anything off of this guy, and he's that guy, the 147 he had in 2018 with the Cubs, dominant.
312-644-6767, 670-11 on the text line. Your reaction to that Brandon Morrow news, or a lot of the White Sox we've been talking this hour as well. And, yeah, I mean, I'm sure the Cubs can find another guy or two named Wick that they can add to the bullpen. I mean, they already got two of them. They can find one or two more, like, nondescript Wicks to add to the bullpen.
Yeah. Brad Wick and the other one, I forgot
Rowan.
His name. Rowan Wick.
Oh, Rowan, yeah. Wick.
One's Wyack with an E, and the other one's just Wick.
Yeah.
Yeah, they found some diamonds in the rough there. There's one guy from San Diego. They traded him for Carl Edwards Jr., and that turned out to be a great deal for them, the Cubs. And bullpen volatility from year to year is kind of questionable, so you don't know what the guy you're going to get back. But I'm trusting in Rowan Wick and the other Wick.
Brad
Wick to pitch well for the Cubby.
Yeah, and the Cubs are going to need that. And, yeah, it just – the other thing that gets at me when we were talking about Madrigal is – that service time manipulation stuff really just bothers me because of just like, you know, maybe it's just because today I went more in depth on, you know, the tax and how much that does or doesn't matter or should or shouldn't matter. And it's just that when you're worried about that stuff, how many years out on a guy that's not an elite prospect, and this isn't just the White Sox doing it, so I'm not picking on them for that. It's happening everywhere. So that stuff just gets at me because it's, like I said, for elite prospects that if they pan out to be what you believe they will, then they're going to be in the high, high numbers in a long-term extension. Then I understand it more. I may not necessarily do it myself if I was in the situation, but I at least get it. Where with more average-ish level prospects, it just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, as you send down patterns for good things you do. Like the White Sox with this signing of Aaron Bummer, taking up his arbitration years, giving him a long-term extension. They're known for this now. So buying before people hit the arbitration numbers, they can see down the line in their minor league system, hey, you guys, if I perform well and I perform well at the major league level, they're going to buy up my arbitration numbers and give me a good deal. That resonates down to the rank and file in the minor leagues. The same thing happens when a guy kicks tail in the minors, is ready to be promoted up, and then you say, yeah, still stay in the minors so we can pick up an extra year. They're not saying that, you know, outright, but mm-hmm. everybody can read the lines and say, yeah, Nick Madrigal's better than Luis García and Danny Mendick. He should be up here. There's the fact that he's not is garbage. And the rank and file down in the minors, like, you know what? The White Sox are playing games with guys that they shouldn't be playing games with. Bring him up. That will show that this is a meritocracy. If I do well as a guy in single A, I'll get the promotion to double A. And if I do well there, mm-hmm. subsequently get put up to the majors or triple A. That will motivate me to do better. Your way you're treating your minor leaguers is going through the system, and the good and the bad, they see it all. So you need to have a message throughout. If you do well here, we're going to pay you, firstly, and then secondly, we're going to promote you to the next level.
Right. And even outside of the whole minor league system and other prospects, the guys that are already on the major league roster, if I'm someone that's in that clubhouse figuring I'm going to be on the 26-man roster, and I'm seeing, you know what? We talk about playoffs. We've been pushing playoffs, possibility of winning the division's winnable, all this stuff. But now we're playing games with one guy? Why? Everyone else has been taken care of, and I'm not even necessarily saying, you know, get an extension done ASAP or anything of the sort. Just have Nick Madrigal there day one. Even if you don't necessarily want to lead him off day one, you want to be a little slower moving in that progression. Start him lower in the lineup, see how he does, and then move him up to the top of the order when you feel more comfortable. I'm fine with that. But to not have him there at all, just for purely manipulation of service time or anything along those lines, unless the Sox come out and say, listen, he still really needs to work on X, Y, and Z, which, to my recollection, we haven't really heard anything of the sort so far this spring. That, yeah, he's a really talented guy and he can fill a role. The fact that we haven't heard anything to the contrary just makes it reek of service time manipulation, which the White Sox don't have time for this year. It's not like it was just the players that are talking playoffs and the front office is like, yeah, I don't know. No, the front office has come out and said, now, this is the time we start to push.
Yes, and so did
the manager. So you have to treat everybody as such.
The manager's saying if anything short of the playoffs, it would be a huge disappointment.
Mm-hmm.
So that's permeating throughout the lineup. That's permeating throughout the team. I like it. It puts pressure on them. But if we're going to be talking that talk, let's walk the walk and put the best players, the best nine out there every day.
312-644-6767 is the number, 6711 on the text line. We're going to take time out, come back, start our last hour off right. We're going to talk with Lawrence Holmes from the station. He's on vacation out in Arizona. Just... what do you say? Not a working vacation, but a vacation with some working. Going to Cubs camp, going to Sox camp. I believe he got to speak with Joe Madden already, too. See this
guy, Joe Madden, yeah.
So we'll ask him about that. We can pretty much go around baseball, and maybe we'll troll him and ask a Bulls question as well. Maybe I'll do that because I'm a bad guy. We're here till 5 on the score.
Lot of home!
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.